A couple weeks ago.
Good morning. It's time to read the Mason City Globe Gazette for Wednesday, February 19th. I'm Jane, and my partner at the microphone for the next hour is Virginia, and we're pleased to be with you. This broadcast is made possible through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. Here are today's headlines on the front page of the Globe Gazette. Annual fundraiser helps local food bank. Bills would add time to punish pedophiles. And Clear Lake tax levy hearings set. So now with today's weather. The regional outlook is colder today with increasing clouds, limited outdoor activity recommended. Expect 2 to 4 hours of sunshine with average relative humidity 70% and poor drying conditions. Frigid tonight, dangerous cold. Limit time outdoors. Average relative humidity 80%. Sunny tomorrow, expect a full day of sun. So today we have decreasing clouds and colder wind, northwest 7 to 14 miles per hour and 9 degrees. And tonight will be clear and bitterly cold. Wind will be northwest 7 to 14 miles per hour and 13 below. And now with the first story, here's Virginia.
Annual fundraiser helps local food bank. It's accompanied by a large color photo, and the caption reads, "Teams assemble at the starting line ahead of the Give and Grab race on Tuesday at Hy-Vee West. All of the products grabbed are donated to the Hawkeye Harvest Food Bank. 14 local businesses compete for a good cause. If you happen to pick Tuesday morning as a good time to hit Hy-Vee West for some grocery shopping, you are in for a surprise. 14 teams of three people, shopping carts decked out with signs and streamers, took turns racing the aisles, dumping large quantities of coffee, cereal, pasta, spaghetti sauce, and cans of Chef Boyardee ravioli into their carts as they went. They had 5 minutes to accomplish one of two things: get as close to $250 in non-perishable food items, or just flat out as many non-perishable food items into their cart as possible. Welcome to the 8th annual Grab and Give grocery event. Get out of the way. The event, which is organized by the Cerro Gordo County Farm Bureau, is actually a fundraiser for Hawkeye Harvest Food Bank. The companies that sponsor teams pay for the food dumped in the carts, and it gets donated to the food bank. Shopping teams are not allowed to use calculators, pens, pencils, paper, or cell phones while they're shopping. Only team members can put groceries in the carts, but others can scout out where items are to help out. And the biggest challenge of all, right before each team takes off, it's provided a shopping list of items the food bank needs, and at least 10 of those items must make their way into the shopping cart. Easy peasy, right? I lost track at $185, said Cody Martin, a loan officer with the Cent Credit Union team. Martin's job was to be the human calculator of the team, pushing the cart and keeping a running total of what went in. Except that teammates Kayla Bills, a member service representative, and Sierra Birding, a loan processor, were hurling mass quantities of stovetop stuffing, Cheerios, and paper towels into the cart so fast the human calculator fried out. In the end, the Cent Credit Union team totaled out at $227.10. Hy-Vee West managers were equally well prepared, with veteran cashiers and baggers managing all the open aisles. By the end of the first heat of competitors, boxes of groceries lined the front of the store between its two entrances. Farm Bureau's Sarah Tweeton said the annual event, which is held at other locations throughout North Iowa, raises thousands in food donations at a time when food banks need it most. Traditionally, the months after Christmas are the most difficult for food banks to keep their shelves stocked. At the close of the event, employees from the Cartersville elevator came closest to the $250 mark, totaling up $245.66 in groceries. For their effort, they received a mini grocery cart filled with Snickers bars. A total of more than $5,300 worth of groceries were donated to the food bank. For the second year in a row, we sense a dynasty in the making. Farm Credit Service employees ranked in the most groceries, totaling $393.88. Rumor has it they pulled in nearly $900 in groceries last year. Jane?
In Clear Lake tax levy hearings set. City looks to keep rate the same for the third straight year. The story is by Ashley Stewart for the Globe Gazette. The city of Clear Lake is looking to keep its property tax levy the same for the third straight year. That's what City Administrator Scott Flory said while reviewing the proposed fiscal year 2021 budget with the Clear Lake City Council Monday evening. Under the proposed budget, the tax levy rate would be $9.70 per $1,000 taxable property valuation, marking the fifth consecutive year the city's tax levy rate has declined or remained the same. In fiscal year 2017, the city tax rate decreased from 1054 to 1004. For fiscal year 2018, the tax rate declined from 1004 to 980, and for fiscal year 2019, the tax rate decreased from 980 to 970. Clear Lake has the fourth lowest tax levy rate among the 95 cities with populations of more than 4,000 in the state of Iowa, Flory said. We've stayed at number four for a great number of years now, but we're in some pretty good company, he said. According to fiscal year 2020 data, the cities of Eldridge, 675, Dyersville, 850, and Evansdale, 931, have lower tax levy rates than Clear Lake. The cities with the highest tax levy rates are Ottumwa, 2246, Fort Dodge, 2042, and Knoxville at 2003. Clear Lake's proposed fiscal year 2021 property tax rate comprises the general fund levy, 7.68439, tort levy, 0.29925, employee benefit levy, 1.35616, and the debt service levy, 0.36020. The general fund levy, which funds the city's public safety, library, park and recreation, public works and administrative departments, is increasing 0.17852 per $1,000 taxable valuation from fiscal year 2020. While the tort, employee benefit and debt service levies are decreasing by a total of 0.17852 per $1,000 taxable valuation from fiscal year 2020. Under the recommended tax rate, residential properties with an assessed valuation of $150,000 in Clear Lake would receive a $767 tax bill for city government services, which is $27 less than fiscal year 2020. The taxable valuation for fiscal year 2020 is $694.8 million, which is a $40.8 million or 6.3% increase from fiscal year 2020. That increase is despite residential, commercial, industrial, and multifamily residential rollbacks established annually by the state legislature, Flory said. That's a positive trend, he said. Most communities are not seeing that kind of growth, and they're certainly not seeing those positive numbers. In fact, many are seeing declining numbers in the property tax base, so we're very fortunate there. The residential rollback for fiscal year 2021 is set at 55.07%, which is a decrease from the previous year's 56.92%. Flory said that means the taxable valuation on residential properties is going to be less, which will ultimately mean a reduction in what residents pay on their property taxes, assuming a constant valuation and a steady tax rate. Clear Lake's largest source of revenue is property taxes, which will represent about 30% of the city's total revenues in the fiscal year 2021. However, it also receives revenue from road use tax, local option sales tax, hotel motel tax, and other sources. Flory said the city of Clear Lake's tax levy accounted for 35% of the total consolidated tax rate of 28.04908 in Clear Lake, while Clear Lake Schools, Sarasota County, Nyack, and the Sanitary District comprise the rest. Based on fiscal year 2020, Clear Lake has the fifth lowest consolidated tax rate among 95 cities with populations over 4,000 in Iowa. The cities of Spirit Lake, 25.72350, Eldridge, 26.41330, Carroll, 26.72378, and Lamar's 27.82133 have lower consolidated levies than Clear Lake. The highest consolidated tax levy rates in fiscal year 2020 were Des Moines, Centerville, and Windsor Heights, according to Flory's budget presentation. After Flory's budget review, the Clear Lake City Council unanimously approved a resolution setting a public hearing for the maximum property tax levy for fiscal year 2021, which is from July 1, 2020 through June 30th, 2020, or 2021. The public hearing will take place at 6 p.m. on Monday, March 2nd at Clear Lake City Hall, 15 North 6th Street. Last year, the Iowa legislature passed a bill that requires cities to approve by resolution the maximum amount of tax dollars for the fiscal year budget before it approves as final budget. If those dollars exceed 102% of the funds collected in the current fiscal year, the vote to approve the resolution must be a two-thirds majority. The proposed fiscal year 2021 budget is a little more than $20.2 million, with $8.8 million going toward operations and maintenance, $10.6 million toward capital, and about $900,000 going to debt service. Flory said the proposed budget is the largest Clear Lake has had in his 18 years as city administrator. The final budget hearing will be held March 16. The 2020-21 fiscal year begins July 1st. Budget documents are available at City Hall and online at the Clear Lake City website. For questions about the proposed property tax levy or budget prior to the hearings, call 641-357-5267. Virginia?
Bills would add time to punish pedophiles. This is a special to the Globe Gazette submitted by Rob Boschart. Iowa lags behind other states when it comes to aiding childhood victims of sexual abuse by adults, oftentimes family members, teachers, clergy, or other close associates, according to experts. We would love to see Iowa step forward from being one of the worst in the country to being one of the best, said Marcy Hamilton, Chief Executive Officer and Academic Director for Child USA, a Philadelphia nonprofit think tank working nationally to end child abuse and neglect. Iowa ranks among the worst states in terms of its statute of limitations on child abuse laws and is, quote, in the middle of mediocre land, end quote, for limits on child abuse civil actions. Meanwhile, it can take years for abuse survivors to fully understand wrongs that were perpetrated against them, Hamilton said. Last year saw a flurry of changes spurred by public outrage over a series of high-profile abuse situations. 12 states eliminated their criminal statute of limitations, and 9, including Iowa, extended their time frames. A number of states extended or eliminated their civil provisions, and 9 provided windows for victims to seek redress for alleged abuses that occurred before the period to bring claims had timed out. This year, 2 senators in Iowa have proposed separate measures aimed at eliminating Iowa's statute of limitations on criminal and civil actions involving sexual abuse of children. Jane?
A North Iowa man accused of sex abuse and parole violations. This is written by Lisa Gruet, the Globe Gazette. A 40-year-old Clear Lake man was arrested on Friday, February 14, after police say he sexually abused a child under the age of 14. Edric Henry Rodschel Morris IV was charged with 1 count of second-degree lascivious acts with a child and 1 count of third-degree sexual abuse as a result of a complaint filed with the Clear Lake Police Department in late January. Morris's charges are being upgraded from standard Class C felonies to Class A felonies because of a previous lascivious acts conviction in 2012, for which Morris was mandated to a special sentence of lifetime parole. A conviction of a Class A felony carries a mandatory life sentence with no eligibility of parole. Alongside these charges, Morris is also accused of a litany of parole violations since 2017, according to court documents filed on January 24. Upon investigation, a parole officer found Morris had visited pornographic websites, smoked marijuana, and consumed alcohol. A GPS device on his vehicle also indicated Morris had been frequenting local liquor stores and had overnight stays at addresses that were not pre-approved by the officer. Further proceedings on the parole violation complaints have been stayed until the sex abuse trial has completed. The Iowa Department of Human Services assisted officers with the investigation. Morris is being held at the Cerro Gordo County Jail on a $1 million bond.
Clear Lake Chamber presents annual awards. The Clear Lake Area Chamber of Commerce recognized nearly 10 individuals, businesses, and organizations during its 77th annual meeting and awards presentation last week. The meeting and awards presentation were held February 11th at the Ventura Community Center. Those recognized during the awards presentation are as follows. Chuck Myers of Hall Realty was named the First Mate of the Year. The First Mate of the Year is an individual who demonstrates significant contributions to the Clear Lake Area Chamber of Commerce during the preceding year, both in attendance and engagement. Central Gardens of North Iowa, Education Partner of the Year. The Education Partner of the Year recognizes an individual, business, or organization dedicated to positively impacting area students or teachers. Association for the Preservation of Clear Lake, North Iowa Service Award. The award was presented to recognize the group of volunteers dedicated to the protection and enhancement of Clear Lake's water quality, wildlife, beaches, and marsh areas. Color the Wind Kite Festival founders Larry and Kay Day, Soaring Above and Beyond Award. This new award, presented by Diana Simmons, acknowledges the Day's selfless contribution to the betterment of the area that cannot be ignored. Clear Lake City Clerk Jennifer Larson, Larry Luker Volunteer of the Year. The Larry Luker Volunteer of the Year Award was created to recognize an individual who stands out in his or her leadership, contributions, and unselfish record of volunteerism to the North Iowa area. Rookies, Sevens, and Tapped, owned by Kyle Haina, Al Haina, and Mike Haina, 2019 Businesses of the Year. This award recognizes a business that demonstrates outstanding service in a professional field while striving for improvements that benefit the broader community. In addition to the awards presentation, the Chamber named two new Chamber board members and three renewed their service for a second three-year term. Those new to the board are Kevin Paul, Clear Lake Bait and Tackle, and Christy Miles, Pritchard's Lake Chevrolet, and those renewing their service are Chelsea Anderson, Dean Snyder Construction, Sam Oman, McKesson, and Carrie Tisdall, American Solutions for Business. Stacy Gustafson, DriveWise, and Christy King, Berglund & Cram, retired from the board. The 2020 Chamber Board officers are Chair Dan Nichols, CL Tell, Past Chair Diana Simmons, McQuaid Agency, Treasurer Sarah Nielsen, First Citizens Bank, Vice Chair Tourism, Carrie Tisdall, American Solutions for Business, Vice Chair Government Relations, Mark Dodd, One Vision, and Chair-elect Natalie Plaggy, Clear Lake Bank and Trust. Jane?
Cerro Gordo County Road Work Approved. This story is by Jared McNett of the Globe Gazette. At the Tuesday morning meeting of the Cerro Gordo County Board of Supervisors, the issue that demanded the most time was road work. For the county, there's work in the short term with projects such as paving for B-43 between Highway 65 and Highway S-56, as well work budgeted in a five-year plan to address a culvert over a Winnebago River tributary and resurfacing out to the Floyd County line. Both the short-term and the long-term plans were approved by the three-member panel on Tuesday. According to County Engineer Brandon Billings, the B-43 paving was a 9-mile project in the 5-year plan to start with, but was turned into a 4-mile project due to budgeting restraints. It's a better use of funds to not repave second half anyway, Billings told the county board, who unanimously approved the plan. Primarily, what he needed from supervisors Casey Callanan, Tim Latham, and Chris Watts was signing off on the project's cover sheet so that the work can move into the bid letting stage. Billings said a major hurdle that the county had to clear was coordinating with the railroad, which took much longer than expected. As for the second half of the project, Billings said that it would stay in the five-year plan and would be 3 years down the road now. In addition to the paving project, the Iowa Department of Transportation has plans to do three bridge replacements near Rockwell. The work, which should last from April through November, would be over the east branch of the Beaver Dam Creek in the county, starting just north of B-60 for the first bridge and ending just south of B-55. Along with the B-43 work, the board also unanimously approved amending of the five-year plan to add a FEMA culvert that Cerro Gordo County can move to complete. That project is on 225th Street and is budgeted for $121,000.
Virginia. Two North Iowa men arrested for harboring a runaway. Two Mason City men are under arrest for helping a juvenile run away who had been reported missing in Clear Lake. Eric John Anderson, age 38, and Leroy David Lumholt, age 59, were each charged with a count of harboring a runaway, an aggravated misdemeanor, on Tuesday, according to a press release from the Clear Lake Police Department. The juvenile was safe and has since been reunited with family. Mason City police officers assisted in the arrest of Anderson and Lumholt, who are each being held at the Cerro Gordo County Jail on $2,000 bond. The incident remains under investigation.
And moving on to the opinion page this morning, Americans are politically exhausted. This, Steve Corbin, is a professor of marketing at the University of Northern Iowa. If you are a straight ticket voter and only vote for all Democrats or all Republicans on the ballot, please refrain from reading this column and go directly to the comic page. Today's thoughts are intended for the split ballot voters. Are you frustrated with today's political tribalism? Are you tired of political name bashing and mudslinging? Are you tired of the braggadocio and grandstanding attitude of some politicians' self-anointed superiority? Do you find yourself part of the 98% of Americans who purposely do not watch Fox News, MSNBC, or CNN? Because it's obvious all three networks are skewing news to a specific 1% political niche wing, and their stories are definitely not fair or balanced. If this is you, welcome to what the nonpartisan and nonprofit More in Common organization has identified as the exhausted majority that comprises 67% of Americans. Voters are not divided just into Democrats and Republicans. In reality, our political leanings are housed in seven distinct segments. In one of America's largest ever investigations of the electorate, where 8,000 Americans were interviewed, two out of three Americans have had it, despaired over political divisions and disengaged from politics. With a very respectable 1% margin of error, the demographically balanced research found that only 8% of Americans can be called diehard Democrats, progressive activists, and 25% are hardcore Republicans, devoted conservatives, and traditional conservatives. This combined 33% of the population are in a cult of their own thinking, vehemently opposed to the other party's values, and as lemmings, would vote for the devil if that were their candidate. The country is split on a range of major issues, that is immigration, white privilege, international trade, climate change, national security, xenophobia, Islamophobia, feminism, DACA, guns, health rights, LGBTQ rights, etc. The exhausted majority are fed up with the polarization-infested American government and society. They are flexible in their views and willing to endorse different policies rather than kowtowing to a single political party. They believe bipartisanship is necessary and expect the same from their elected delegates. To that end, a 253-page book, The Ultimate Guide to the 2020 Election, authored by Ryan Clancy and Margaret White from the nonpartisan and non-for-profit organization No Labels, is a must-read for the exhausted majority. The book, which is a spinoff from the more common research findings, present 101 nonpartisan solutions to a multitude of issues, plus it offers 70 questions to be asked of presidential candidates. For the exhausted majority to bring back civility and accountability to the political arena, first of all, they must not think about it, but must vote in every election. In the 2016 election, only 55.7% of voting age Americans voted. U.S. ranks number 26 out of 32 developed nations in citizen voting share. The exhausted majority can decide the 2020 election if they'll vote. Secondly, they must let their elected officials know their opinions on issues and hold them accountable for their bill sponsorship and voting actions. A simple 2-minute call, text, or email per week to our 2 senators and 4 representatives, a mere 12 minutes, needs to be a part of every exhausted majority's weekly to-do list. Since 33% of Americans are tribal and won't stray from their cult, only the exhausted majority can change politics. Join me to change the exhausted majority to the exhilarated majority. To find out which of the 7 political segments portray you, go to www.hiddentribes.us and take an 8-minute shortened version of the survey. No personally identifiable information is collected, and user data is not sold to any third party. Virginia.
Iowans hurt and want action from Senator Ernst on health care. This is submitted by Emily Holly, who is the executive director of Iowa Voices and a longtime health care advocate with severe chronic pain. Iowans take the caucuses seriously, and rightfully so. But with the caucuses over and the candidates, the press corps, and the field organizers who flood our state every 4 years moving on to South Carolina, we shouldn't lose focus on issues that affect us at home. As a health care advocate and an Iowan with severe chronic pain, a walking pre-existing condition, I hope that we can have a conversation about health care. The fact of the matter is our health care is still under attack in Washington and in the courts. Iowans with pre-existing conditions are worried about losing their health coverage, and the cost of prescription drugs is skyrocketing. Iowans have looked to Senator Joni Ernst to fight for them, but every time she has had the opportunity to stand up for Iowans with health care concerns, Senator Ernst has let us down. She's voted to limit our access to health care time and time again. She voted against pre-existing condition protections and for allowing insurance companies to charge people over 50 5 times more for health coverage. She voted in favor of the legislation that led to the lawsuit to tear down the Affordable Care Act. Those actions directly hurt Iowans that we have spoken to. For months, we've heard from Iowans like Jen in Des Moines, who is concerned for her son with autism. Kevin in Cedar Rapids has Crohn's disease, and he's worried about being able to access and afford the care he needs. Vicky in Independence has glaucoma and is taking a very expensive medication that she's been forced to ration. 1 in 3 of us have a pre-existing condition, and we shouldn't be forced to pay more for our care or, worse, denied care completely. Between her opposition to Medicare negotiation and support for the age tax, it's clear that Senator Joni Ernst's priorities aren't with everyday Iowans. We need Senator Ernst to stop supporting increases in health care costs, especially in older Iowans, and protect people with pre-existing conditions. Iowa will return to normal after all the pomp and press depart for the next nominating contest, but for a lot of us, our worries and concerns about health care will still need addressing after the caucuses. Jane?
Now we move to letters to the editor. The first one is more than one reason to support the NIAC referendum, and this is written by Senator Amanda Reagan. I am writing today to strongly encourage all readers within the reach of your newspaper to vote yes in support of the NIAC bond issue. My hope is every voter in NIAC's 11-county area of responsibility will affirm its importance and continuing value to North Iowa and the entire state. My admiration for NIAC is very personal. Every member of my family has enhanced their education opportunities through this wonderful school. It is important to remember NIAC is not only a starting point for higher education, the college also offers a wide variety of technical training courses. Students can start careers as varied as air conditioning, heating, car and truck mechanics, to healthcare. This bond referendum will be used to expand workforce training and educational opportunities throughout the school. We will always need graduates who learn the most updated information in their area of interest. Qualified, capable technicians are more and more in demand. The better NIAC can train people, the better the quality of life for each of us. There are many reasons for you to support the NIAC bond referendum. Higher quality graduates and levels of instructions are just two of them. A yes vote benefits all our students and, as importantly, will benefit the citizens of North Iowa. Supporting NIAC on March 3rd is a great way to grow education in our area.
Virginia. We'll pause on our letters to the editor and read our remembrances for today. Today we have two. The first is for Judy K. Spangler Schlichtel, and the second is for Ron Charlson. Judy K. Spangler Schlichtel, age 82, of Lake Villa, Illinois, a native of Corwith, Iowa, passed away February 8th after a short illness. She passed away peacefully with her family at her side. Celebration of life services will be held at a later date at Prince of Peace Catholic Church in Lake Villa, Illinois. Interment will follow church services. Judy was born July 4, 1937 in Mason City, Iowa, the daughter of Bernard and Lila Gray Spangler. She was a member of the Corwith High School class of 1955. Following several years of working in Des Moines, she moved to Britt, Iowa, where she was employed at the high school. This is where she met her future husband, Gary. They were married August 11, 1962. Judy served as postmaster of the Ventura office for 25 years. Judy was a devout Catholic, avid reader, and enjoyed all activities with her children and grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to St. Jude Children's Hospital. Arrangements conducted by Ringa Funeral Home in Lake Villa, Illinois. Ronald Charlson, age 83, of Clear Lake, passed away Monday, February 17th in Eureka, Missouri. Arrangements are pending at Major Erickson Funeral Home. Jane?
And then back to the letters to the editor, we have NIAC is an economic engine for all of North Iowa. And this letter is from Gary Watnam of Mason City. By any measure, North Iowa Community College, NIAC, is one of the large economic engines that drives the economy of North Iowa. On March 3, we will have the opportunity to vote for a bond referendum that will help NIAC maintain its excellent reputation and grow its contribution to our region. NIAC feeds businesses with skilled graduates at a time when there is an urgent need to fill employment vacancies. NIAC provides the skills and education that support the agricultural, manufacturing, construction, education, medical, transportation, business, and automotive fields, just to name a few. It provides these skills to a diverse age group who may be just starting, those that are refocusing, and to those who are completely changing their career paths. This bond issue will allow the institution to enhance its current offerings and provide for future growth that will provide greater opportunity for generations to come. The fact that a large majority of NIAC graduates stay in our state is good news in a time of declining opportunities and population in some areas. In addition to nationally recognized education, NIAC also provides us with a venue that brings in excellent entertainment, sporting events, the arts, and other learning opportunities that promote an expanded lifestyle. I would urge everyone to send a strong message that we continue to support education and that our area recognizes the importance of this investment. Please join me in voting yes for the NIAC bond referendum on March 3rd.
The Gingerbread Lady is a highly recommended show. This is submitted by Pat Blanchard of Mason City. I just returned from a most enjoyable evening this Valentine's Day. The Mason City Community Theater presented The Gingerbread Lady. This title does not give a clue as to the storyline at all, but believe me, this is a play you will not want to miss. The director, Steve Musson, gave us a spectacular performance with his selection of actors. These gals and guys were seasoned performers, and that was very evident. Special notice was given to Michelle Murray, as she did steal the show. Also, in perfect form was Troy Sunt. That is not to say that the other actors were also taking the show away. If you haven't had the opportunity to see the show, I urge you to go and enjoy an evening or Sunday afternoon and be amazed. You will not be able to get $15 worth of pleasure any easier. February 20th through 23rd. See you there. Jane?
And the last letter to the editor this morning is thankful for the fine people found in Mason City. And this is written by Craig and Sharon Rule of Clear Lake. My wife and I had a wonderful Valentine's supper at Papa's American Cafe Friday. To our surprise, when we asked for our bill of fare, our server informed us that our meals were already taken care of for us. Almost unbelieving, we asked her to explain, to which she replied that our meals were taken care of. Looking about the restaurant, my wife insisted knowing who had paid the charges. Turning to the adjacent table, she continued, "Well, it was these people right here." A bit embarrassed, I asked if we should know them. "No, we just wanted to treat you," the young diners replied. They were just a young couple, also having a Valentine dinner date. As we thanked them, they stopped eating their meals to visit with us. Although we didn't exchange names, they were so very polite, friendly, and kind that we would very publicly like to thank and compliment them as one more example of what fine people from young to old there are in this world.
Moving on to the sports page. For boys basketball, Clear Lake number 4 in latest poll. 5 area teams ranked in the top 10. The time has finally come for us to hang up the weekly basketball polls for the season. After several months of seeing our North Iowa teams rise and fall in the rankings, there is finally some resolution, at least in the lower classes. With the district playoffs upon us, it's time to see how things shook out in the final Class 1A and 2A boys basketball poll of the year. The final 3A and 4A polls will come out next week. Class 1A in first is Easton Valley with a record of 21-0, number 2, WACO at 21-0, 3, South O'Brien with 19-2, and 4 is Bishop Garrigan with a record of 19-2. The Golden Bears went up one spot in the rankings this week and are one of the teams to keep an eye on through the district round. After a 102-64 win over North Iowa to finish the regular season, Garrigan got a first-round bye in the district playoffs and will play 3-win Storm Lake St. Mary's on Thursday. Number 5 is Remsen St. Mary's with a record of 18-3, who's tied with West Fork with a record of 19-2. After ending the season with a 2-point loss to Osage to fall into a tie for the top of Iowa title, West Fork fell 2 spots in the rankings. After a 10-day break, the Warhawks will take on a 4-18 Clarksville in the second round of the district playoffs. Number 7, Montezuma with a record of 19-2. Number 8, Lake Mills, also with a record of 19-2. The Bulldogs ended the season with a pair of dominant wins and got a first-round bye in districts. The Bulldogs will most likely take on St. Ansgar in the district semifinals and Rockford in the finals. Two intriguing games that should provide them with a pretty good pre-state test. Number 9 is Burlington Notre Dame with a record of 17-4, and 10, Martinsdale St. Mary's with a record of 19-3. For Class 2A, Trainer 21-1, 2 Northland 21-0, who's tied with Van Meter 20-0, 4 Monticello 18-2, 5 West Sioux 19-2, 6 Comanche 18-3, 7 Applington Parkersburg 19-2, number 8 Boyden Hall record of 18-3, 9 Western Christian 16-5, 10th is Osage with a record of 19-2. After 7 straight wins, to end the regular season and winning a share of the conference title, the Green Devils finally got some love in the polls, jumping to number 10. Thanks to their 19-2 record, the Green Devils got a first-round bye and will play Clarion Goldfield Dows on September 20th for a spot in the semifinals. For Class 3A, 1, Norwalk, 16-3, 2, Mount Vernon, 18-2, 3, Davenport Assumption, 15-4, and 4 is Clear Lake with a record of 18-2. With the North Central Conference already in the bag and now 11 straight wins, the Lions shot up 4 spots in this week's rankings. After Tuesday night's game at Algona, the Lions will open substate play at home on Monday against Boone. 5 is MOC Floyd Valley, 18-3, 6 Carroll, 16-3, 7 Marion, 16-4. Winterset is in 8th at record of 15-4, 9 Glenwood, 16-4, 10 Pella, 15-5. And then finally for your class 4A, there's no local teams. We'll run through them real quick here. 1, Ankeny Central. 2, Waterloo West, tied with North Scott. 4, Cedar Falls. 5, Iowa City West. 6, Waukee. 7, Dubuque Senior. 8, Council Bluffs Lincoln. 9, Valley. And 10, Indianola. Jane?
And the next story on the front pages of the sports section is Ball Showcases Skills in Major League Camp. Area standout at spring training with Atlanta Braves. And there are two pictures of Bryce Ball on the front page here of the sports page. This story is by Shane Lance of the Globe Gazette. It's baseball season again. It can be pretty hard to believe with the deep chill that is currently hovering above the Great Plains. If you are dreaming of warm weather and springtime activities, Northport, Florida is a good place to start. According to Bryce Ball, it's a pretty good place to spend the spring. On a recent 86-degree Florida day, the former Nyack and Newman Catholic baseball star discussed his first spring as a member of the Atlanta Braves system. Back in early January, Ball got the news that he would be attending Major League spring training, making him the first former Nyack player to be invited to a big league camp. The 6'6", 250-pound lefty slugger hit .362 in 2 seasons at Nyack with an on-base percentage of .487, a combined 21 home runs and 96 RBIs in 112 games. After transferring to Dallas Baptist before his junior year, Ball hit .325 with 18 homers and 51 RBI in 1 season, before getting selected in the 24th round by the Braves. After getting drafted, Ball went on an offensive tear. At his first stop at rookie ball, the former North Iowa standout hit .324 for the Danville Braves with a .410 on-base percentage and a .676 slugging percentage with 13 home runs in 41 games. Ball was promoted to Single-A Rome and hit .337, .367, and .547 with 4 homers in 21 games. It's a huge leap to go from Mason City to Texas to play baseball, create some of your best friends, and then you leave them after a year, Ball said. You go to professional baseball where you really don't know anybody. You are familiar with some people, but for the most part, you don't know anybody on a personal level. For Ball, the minor league baseball experience was a lot like he expected. During his wintertime training in Dallas, Ball would listen to the stories of the different professional players that came back for the winter, hearing their tales of the discomforts that come along with playing lower-level professional ball. There are plenty of long bus rides and poorly maintained fields in the lower minor leagues, but Ball seems to take it in stride. If you are complaining all the time about how bad the fields are and all the time on the bus, you're not going to be very successful, Ball said. There are good facilities in most of minor league baseball. I'd be lying if I said there weren't places where you look at it and you go, are you sure we can play on this field? It's a difficult life for sure, but it's what you make of it. With Ball spending the next month in the big league facilities, he is getting a first-hand look at how the major league players live. Once minor league players get a taste of the good life, that can be powerful motivation to play well and get a promotion. Just from being in the big league locker room is not even on the same planet or galaxy in how things are run in minor league ball, Ball said. Minor league baseball is what I heard it was like, but I think it's important to make the most out of it. The higher you go, the better you are treated. It's plain and simple. For now, Ball gets to hang around with players that he has idolized for years, players such as Ronald Acuna, Ozzie Albies, Freddie Freeman, and Nick Markakis are now his co-workers. When Ball watches those hitters do their work in the cage or watches the pitchers throw in the bullpen, he realizes how lucky he is. Just to watch them work in the cage next to me is incredible, Ball said. These are some of the best players the game has to offer, and they're right next to me, standing and talking, which is great. Ball showed prodigious power from a young age. In his 2016 senior season at Newman Catholic, Ball hit 17 homers with 67 RBI and finished the year hitting .520, .647, 1.245. Seeing Ball make the leap from Class 1A to Major League camp in just 4 short years has made the community at his high school very proud. He is a guy that has always dreamed of getting to this level and will do whatever it is going to take to get him there, Newman Catholic coach Alex Bowles said. You can see it in the way that he has transformed his body since his freshman and sophomore year of high school. The guy has put in the right amount of work and has definitely taken care of himself. After his strong 2019 season, Ball shot up on the organizational depth chart, MLB.com, recently named him as one of the 30 MLB prospects who are set to break out in 2020. Ball is being mentioned as a top option to become the Braves' first baseman of the future. While he is still probably at least a year or two away from cracking the MLB lineup, if all continues to go well, a big league spring training invite is a sign that the team has high hopes for the 21-year-old Ball. The big part is walking in and seeing your name on the locker, Ball said. I get to be out on the field with those guys and be around them for the next month. I'm super excited to get out there and start working with those guys and start learning. They have a ton of insight for me, I'm sure. Several former NIAC players, aside from Ball, have made the jump to the professional level in recent years. Pitcher Brandon Williamson was drafted in the second round out of Texas Christian by the Seattle Mariners in 2019. Outfielder Malik Ziegler became the first NIAC player to be drafted when he was taken in the 22nd back in 2016 by the San Francisco Giants. Former Trojan Luke Becker was drafted out of the University of Kentucky in the ninth round of the 2018 draft by the San Diego Padres. I think that is cool to be the first with how many great players have come out of NIAC, Ball said. I'm sure there is more coming with the talent that is coming out of there. Ball will most likely start the year in single A, either back with Danville or with the high A Florida Fire Frogs. The team hasn't given him an indication of where he will end the year, but Ball's personal goal is at least make it to the double A Mississippi Braves. I think double A is a very achievable goal by the end of the season, and I hope to get a significant amount of playing time up there, he said. I think that is a good goal. Who knows? Baseball is a crazy game, and who knows what happens? Former NIAC coach Travis Hergert, who is now an assistant pitching coordinator with the Philadelphia Phillies, could see that Ball was going to be a special talent. He's worked really, really hard, Hergert said. You're probably going to see him in a big league uniform here sooner than later. We always knew that Bryce had those big league intangibles with his size and his freakish power that you didn't see from just run-of-the-mill players. Ball spent most of this past off-season training at Dallas Baptist. Rather than spend his winter hitting at the indoor cage at NIAC, Ball wanted to be able to take ground balls and train in the warm sunshine. Now, with the month of Florida heat and baseball to look forward to, life is looking good for Ball. It was nice to be here. The sun is out, and there was a little breeze, Ball said. It's pretty warm. You can wear shorts and a t-shirt and not freeze your butt off. It felt good to be back out in the heat again. I miss the summertime heat. Virginia?
The prep roundup. GHB boys advance with 70-56 win. The Garner-Hayfield-Ventura boys basketball team jumped out to a big first quarter lead and then had to stave off Belmont-Clemmie in a 70-56 victory in the Class 2A District 5 on Monday night in Garner. Senior Landon Dahlbeck and junior Kevin Myers paced the Cardinals, whose record is 12-10, with 19 and 18 points respectively, while junior Hayden Hutchinson contributed 10. Myers also had a team-high 9 rebounds. Garner-Hayfield-Ventura moves on to the second round against Forest City, whose record is 14-7 at 8 p.m. Thursday. Northwood-Kensett 51, Central Springs 47. The Vikings won their third game of the season Monday night, downing the Panthers 51-47 in the Class 1A District 3 at Central Springs. Junior J.T. Whitelow had a big night, scoring 25 points on 9 of 13 shots, including 3 of 5 from the three-point range. Two other Vikings scored in double figures, with junior Caden Roberts and sophomore Kyle Nichols each scoring 10 points. Nichols also had a game-high 9 rebounds. Sophomore Angel Jose had a team-high 13 points for the Panthers, while junior Tyler Marino and senior Mason Hanf each contribute 11 points. Sophomore Drew Kelly had a team-high 10 rebounds. The Vikings will play at Lake Mills, whose record is 19-2, in an 8 p.m. tip-off on Thursday. The Panthers end the season with a record of 3-20. Jane?
Barry Anderson resigns as Mason City's AD. The story is by Shane Lance of the Globe Gazette. The Mason City School Board accepted the resignation of Activities Director Barry Anderson at its Monday night meeting after he was placed on paid administrative leave last month. According to the resignation agreement, Anderson will remain on full administrative leave with the school district until June 30th. The agreement also states that Anderson will not apply for employment with the district in the future. Anderson worked as an assistant principal at Mason City High School for 8 years before taking over as activities director on July 1, 2018. He replaced former activities director Bob Kinney, who retired after 11 years. Anderson's annual salary at the time of his promotion was $94,000. In an email response, Mason City Superintendent Dave Versteeg declined to reveal the circumstances that led to Anderson being placed on leave, but said the matter was investigated internally by the district. Anderson did not immediately return phone calls seeking comment.
NIAC women's basketball remains number one. For the third straight week, the NIAC women's basketball team is ranked number one in the NGCAA Division II poll. According to a NIAC release, the Trojans, who took over the top spot in the poll on February 3rd, moved its record to 26-1 overall, with a 108-43 win over Iowa Central last Saturday. Kirkwood, whose record is 24-2, remained at number two in this week's poll. NIAC hosts the rival Eagles at 1 p.m. on Saturday. The last time the two ICCAC rivals met as the top two ranked teams in the nation was December 14, 2013. In that game, number two NIAC nipped number one Kirkwood 115-111 in overtime. In the 2013-14 season, the NIAC women were ranked number one for three straight polls on two occasions. The Lady Trojans held down the top spot in the rankings from December 18th to January 8th and from February 12th to 26th. NGCAA Division II Women's Basketball Poll, February 17, 2020, is NIAC, Kirkwood, Lincolnland, Macomb, Labette, Lakeland, Johnson County, Highland Community College, Kansas, Catawba Valley, Bryant and Stratton out of Wisconsin, Niagara County, CCBC Essex, Illinois Central, Lakeland Community College, Kansas City, Kansas Community College, Sullivan County, Mott, Muskegon, Mid-Michigan, and Pima. NIAC's Minto Mendoza win districts. NIAC Christian Minto remained perfect in his first season as a collegiate wrestler. The freshman, who is from Marina, Florida, and the younger brother of NIAC assistant coach Basil Minto, claimed the 165-pound title Sunday at the NGCAA Central District Tournament on the Iowa Lakes campus in Estherville. The top-ranked Minto, whose record is 19-0, topped Iowa Central's second-ranked Ashton Eiler, whose record is 9-6, to claim the district title and earn the tournament's Most Outstanding Wrestler award. Minto also topped Eiler 7-6 when the two met in a dual meet during the regular season. NIAC, which placed third in the team standings with 119 points, also received a district title from 149-pounder Tony Mendoza. The second-ranked sophomore edged Ellsworth's top-ranked Cardiante Wilson 3-2 in the title match. Mendoza, whose record is 15-3, has dropped a 5-3 overtime decision to Wilson in the regular season. NIAC qualified 9 wrestlers for the NGCAA Division I National Meet, which is set for March 6th and 7th in Council Bluffs. The 9 qualifiers for the Trojans are Clarence Lee Green at 125, Brock Luthens, Hunter Luke at 141, Mendoza 149, Sandifer at 157, Christian Minto at 165, Cody Kletheimer at 174, Reldon Miller at 184, and Holton Truax at 197. Luthens, Luke, Mendoza, and Miller will wrestle in their second national tournament. Luthans at 133 and Mendoza at 149 both earned All-American honors in 2019, with Luthans placing 7th and Mendoza placing 5th. Waldorf's Martin, Player of the Week. Warrior senior Demetrius Martin turned in a career-best performance on senior night, nearly securing a weekend sweep for the Waldorf men's basketball team. Leading the way with game-high points each night, Martin helped Waldorf beat Presentation. Then the Warriors came up just one shot short of upsetting number 22 Mayville State, as he averaged 32 points per game in the two contests. The strong performance on the court earned Martin his third North Star Athletic Association Men's Basketball Player of the Week award, which the league announced Monday. Jane?
Yes. Now, going back to some of the stories we missed, the Cerro Gordo count, two North Iowa men arrested for harboring runaway. The story is by Lisa Gruet of the Globe. Two Mason City men are under arrest for helping a juvenile run away who had been reported missing in Clear Lake. Eric John Anderson, 38, and Leroy David Lumholt, 59, were each charged with a count of harboring a runaway, an aggravated misdemeanor, on Tuesday, according to a press release from the Clear Lake Police Department. The juvenile was safe, and he has since been reunited with the family. Mason City police officers assisted in the arrest of Anderson and Lumholt, who are each being held at the Cerro Gordo County Jail on $2,000 bond. The incident remains under investigation.
And we'll finish up with looking back. Today is Wednesday, February 19th, the 50th day of 2020. There are 316 days left this year. For today's highlight in history, on February 19th, 1945, Operation Detachment began during World War II as some 30,000 U.S. Marines began landing on Iwo Jima, where they commenced a successful month-long battle to seize control of the island from Japanese forces. On this date, in 1803, Congress voted to accept Ohio's borders and constitution. In 1807, former Vice President Aaron Burr, accused of treason, was arrested in the Mississippi Territory in present-day Alabama. Burr was acquitted at trial. In 1846, the Texas state government was formally installed in Austin, with J. Pinckney Henderson taking the oath of office as governor. In 1878, Thomas Edison received a U.S. patent for an improvement in phonograph or speaking machines. In 1934, the U.S. Army Air Corps began delivering mail after President Franklin D. Roosevelt canceled private contracts that had come under suspicion. That brings us to the end of the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for today, Wednesday, February 19th, 2020. Your readers have been Jane and Virginia. This broadcast has come to you through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of IRIS or KCMR. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for today's reading of the Des Moines Register. You are listening to IRIS, your 24-hour radio reading service. Have a great day.